Hey, kids.
You're listening to the internet's wettest podcast about video games, consoles,
and pancakes.
The SML Podcast.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. It is a party cast, and we've got the whole crew here. We've got Chris, we've got Brooke, we've got Purnell, and we've got Tim. How is everybody doing?
Human interaction is extremely difficult, and I'm drinking water. How are you guys doing?
I, too, am drinking water, sir.
Yes.
I only ever drink water, really, so.
Love that.
Yeah.
I've been known to partake.
In water.
Water is so delicious, its only weakness is the quicker picker upper.
All right, let's restart the show.
That was what I wanted to hear. And, no.
Yeah.
So what's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast.
Yeah, I was like, do we really need Purnell here as he was reviewing?
Hey, no one needs me here, but that makes me want to show up that much more.
We're going to be real light on reviews if you wasn't here.
We don't need him here. We want him here.
Yeah. My man, see, that's how it goes. Do. Good people.
You are loved, Purnell.
Purnell, I heard it was your birthday.
No, you didn't. Someone lied to you.
Oh, my God. Happy birthday, dude.
Someone lied to you. It's not my birthday. It's a Muppet. Muppet said that.
It's a Muppet's birthday? Yeah.
It's a Muppet's birthday. Kermit the Slog. You know.
Kermit the Slog.
Nice.
Kermit the Slog.
But, It was a bad day, though. It was a crappy day, but I made the best of it with some friends. I had some beer. I had a breakfast, which involved chicken and waffles, which is not remotely a breakfast food combo, but I don't care. It was delicious.
It's an any time of the day kind of thing.
Yeah. Here to that. So, and I made the best of the day, and that was important. I did birthday burpees, which can kiss my ass. I hate birthday burpees, and I don't know how they make sense. Burpees.
I only know what a burpee is, and like, no thanks.
So, the gym I go to, when they know it's your birthday,
I bet you have to do as many as you are old.
Yes, that's exactly it. However, they don't stop your normal workout. So, in addition to your normal workout, they slap that in there. So you're already tired, and it's just like, okay, enough roundhouse kicks. Get down and do 10 burpees. Like, I don't want to do 10 burpees. Like, you can do them now, you can do them later. All at once, like, I'll just do something now. Fine, 10 burpees. Now get back up and do your sit-ups and push-ups. I just did burpees. Do push-ups, too. Fuck you. That's what I want to hear. Keep working. So it pretty much put me through that, and by the time I was done, I was like, well, I'm not going to go hiking anymore, but I still ended up going and playing 3 hours of Pump It Up. So by the time I was done, my knee stopped working.
Yeah.
Well, I wanted to burn a lot of calories. I wanted to put the hurt on that day. And when I got home, my knee stopped working. So I told you, I put the hurt on. So
your knee just clocked out. It's like, I'm done with this shit.
Yeah. I mean, so other birthday traditions and physical activity. In pro wrestling training, sometimes you get birthday chops where everyone in the class chops your chest for how old you are. And so you will have meat for chest. I think it's just everyone in the class. I don't think they do the age thing, because otherwise people would be in real bad shape. And it's bad enough when 10 people get to chop your chest as hard as you can.
The birthday medic.
In capoeira, you have to play capoeira against every single person that is present, which is very exhausting.
You basically
have to fight everyone in the room.
Why do adult birthdays have to be such a bad time?
What happened to dropping straws in a cup?
What is that?
You never did that at like Burger King?
Everyone forgot about it. That's what
above a cup
it.
And drop it in, and if you dropped it in the cup, you would win a prize?
No, I've never experienced that.
Wow, really?
This doesn't sound like fun. I want people trying to kill me instead.
Joe is showing his age. Yeah, we are. Back in the 80s, we would drop straws into cups for Burger King prizes, and I would wear my crown. We would play Duck Goose.
Well, this is less about showing your age and more about my general ignorance. I mean, we're about the same age.
I mean, you're a little older there, aren't you, Pernell? Not to
out
you,
but... Yeah, I'm about 50. I totally forgot about that. Shit.
72.
Yep, I'm an old... No, I'm not 72, man. I'm 50. Come on. Come on. I don't want to exaggerate or anything.
You're actually 50?
Yes. Yeah.
Jeez,
come on,
man.
Now.
Yes. I would have never known if you didn't tell me.
Yeah.
I don't believe you. Yeah. And that I didn't think you were that old. Like, in the good way. It's not like, oh my god, you look like shit, you're only 50. It's like, no, it's like, oh.
It's old motherfucker. Look how old he is. Disgusting.
Aki says you're all old fucks except for Brooke, because, hey, Brooke.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, Aki's there.
Jesus Christ, Aki, you are a good person, but you are thirsty as shit.
I appreciate Aki being unabashedly horny on main.
I don't knock it, but I gotta acknowledge it, though.
Yes. Oh, absolutely.
I love that it's become a shameless bit for her, too. That's what I really like. She just throws herself in there.
No shame. Awesome. Gotta love it.
Gotta respect that.
I gotta admit, if one day something happened where she just stopped feeling comfortable being that way, I'd legitimately feel bad about teasing her. Like, crap, that wasn't the intention. These were teases of endearment, not teases of insult. And no,
that's all our show is, teases of endearment.
Yeah, like, you're my friend. I'm not going to be a jerk to you.
Yeah, like, if I like you, I'm going to give you shit. If I don't like you, then I'm not.
Yeah,
that's when you gotta worry.
Mm-hmm. That's actually a good way to put that, too. Yeah. Yeah. When you don't like somebody, just like, just get the fuck away from me.
Yeah, basically. I'm just like, whatever.
Oh. So that's your answer, Aki. You're good peoples. Thirsty as fuck, and that's why we love you. Well, we love you for other reasons, too.
Aki says, I mean, do you blame me? Have you seen Brooke?
She's let gorgeous. Aki read her own message because she's here.
Don't put people on the spot, Aki.
I mean, be careful because she will join.
She did. She's here.
Too late. Already here.
She's been here.
I was like, that can't be her joining. Surely that's something else.
No, it was me because I was going to read off my comment.
Oh, my God.
So I was like, nope, Joe's taking too long.
Joe Bird. Joe. You took too long. Look what happened to us.
Yeah, have you actually seen any of the pictures Brooke's posted of herself? She's very attractive.
Y'all yeah,
of course I'm going to be a thirsty bitch. It's just nature.
Thank you. I have no qualms with encouraging my friends with positivity in words. So, yeah, in your face.
Speaking of Brooke, how was your week?
It was fine.
Speaking of the most attractive person here, how was your week?
True words haven't been spoken.
Look at the rest of us.
Yeah, I know. Like, this, yeah.
There is no competition.
The bar is not very high off the ground.
I think Chris is the only one of us that is balding. And if he is, he hides it well.
I'm what?
Not we're the balding, only one of us that's not, all the guy here that's not balding.
Oh, yeah, I'm like all the... I'm all the way bald, dude. I got like a little bit of hair above my ears. I just wear a hat.
Dude, balding does not make you unattractive.
Thanks.
No,
I'm proof of that.
I'm just talking about I got a widow's peak up here. I'm not insulting anybody. Just saying.
Yeah, you got more hair than I do, Pernell.
mercy.
This is one of the weirdest opening like banter sessions we have ever had.
Should we just do reviews?
Yeah.
Well, no, how's Brooke doing? We have to find that out first. And
oh,
then
my
we can
God. I'm fine, you guys. It's good. I'm just, like, nervously stammering, and just steam is, like, coming out of my ears, so no big deal.
Is like,
blushing from ear to ear yet?
When I told Brooke, when I told you about, like, Ultimate Games, I didn't mean that I wanted to be a part of one. What the fuck's going on here? Get this out of here.
One of these days, we're going to have to see a picture of Brooke blushing. I want to say it's so bad.
Oh my god.
No.
One day we have to see a picture of Aki.
That's
true. That's what I'm talking about.
That's a good point, Joe.
Aki is pulling a Cole and she's not revealing her identity.
See you later.
I have seen Cole.
Wow, I've never seen Aki.
I've seen colder.
Yeah.
she fucking left.
You can dish it out, but you can't take it.
No. Is that the secret?
I was going to say that.
Brooke, there we go. We all learned a valuable secret today.
Huh? What's the secret?
That's how you deter like Aki when she's getting in your face. Like, give me a photo. Send a picture. We want to see.
Oh, yeah.
Bye-bye. Like, there it is. The secret is out.
Yeah, now I'm red and I don't do that.
Very anime. I love it. This is an anime ending to this.
And then Rupier says, yo, boy. I have enough hair for all of y'all.
Cool.
Well, you've heard of Locks for Love. How about Locks and for Nerds?
I'm better off without.
Yeah, honestly, I don't miss it.
No.
I never had it. My janitor told me when I was 16 that I was going bald. It blew.
The only thing I don't like is when I get sunburned up there. That sucks. But
have you tried wearing a hat all the time?
No, I don't do that. I do try to, like, as soon as I walk out of the house and feel the sun, I'm like, oh shit, sunscreen.
See, I've never applied sunscreen up there.
I do copious amounts.
I just made wearing a hat all the time my brand, and apparently it's fooled people. Unintentionally. I mean, it's not like I was really hiding it. There's pictures of me all over Facebook without a hat on. Anyway.
Whatever. Me too.
I'm playing.
What was that?
I'm playing. That's what he said.
I said I'm playing Civilization on the Super Nintendo with a mouse.
I didn't know they had a mouse on the NES.
It's Mario
SNES.
Pink. Oh, I thought you SNES. Said NES. All right.
No. Yeah, SNES. That's the only one that can handle the high-powered graphics of the civilization.
Was it Polytopia that did it?
Huh?
Did it light the bug, Polytopia from last week?
Oh, it must have, yeah, because I was thinking about Civilization recently. I was like, you know what? I played the hell out of the DOS version of that, but I never act because I had one of my first video games or computer games on a CD-ROM was a split disc between Civilization and some game called Mantis, and I played Civilization all the time and I loved it. I beat it like both I won the space race and I conquered the world with two different countries because that's just two different win conditions. Uh-huh. But anyways, I'd always seen that it was on the Super Nintendo and I never tried it. And I was like, I want to try it on the Super Nintendo, see how it holds up. It's it takes a lot more clicks because it's not exactly like, it's not designed. It's designed to be both controller or mouse. But then I plugged in the mouse and yeah, it cursor's just fine on it. It's like, it's very, it's very good. It just requires like an extra click here and there. And they explain really a lot more stuff. They explain a lot more stuff because it doesn't have a Bible-sized instruction book like the computer version.
Fair.
Yeah. Anyway, it's fun.
It makes me wonder how Age of Empires is going to hold up because they just announced Age of Empires 2 is coming to Xbox next year.
Oh, that's going to be interesting. That's one of my ex-roommate's favorite games.
Yeah, Xbox One, Series X and S, Game Pass, all that fun shit.
That's a classic one. My my Civilization country, I decided to be America, and my leader
Big
of America.
Mistake.
Yeah, I know. It was like, America is going to conquer the world, and I'm like, oh, this makes me feel bad. So I named my fearless leader of the country of America, Brandon. So.
Oh no!
Yeah.
Christ. Is he going? He's going. Let's go.
Yeah. I just thought it was funny.
Oh, should we get to reviews?
Yeah, I just thought I'd talk about a video game since, you know, that's what I'm doing.
There's no point in talking about video games on this show.
Right, because even if you say it's the best game you've played since Elden Ring, no one will try Card Survival Tropical Island, Brooke. Come on, you guys.
Hey, what do you mean? That didn't happen.
Did you try? Did you try it?
Did I? Hang on.
Did you see how many games I can review?
This is the first I'm hearing about it.
Okay.
Oh, were you not here that week?
Huh. Yeah, I think he wasn't here that week. I really love it. I'm not going to take up any more time in this banter, but don't worry, I will bring it up next week and guilt you all, and then slowly start buying it for each one of you, so you have to talk about it with me. Aww.
You know what? I might just
so you're taking next week off. How are you going to bring it up next week?
That's a good point. I guess I'll have to join just to see
all right.
You guys played also, the card game.
All right, Brooke, it is now on my wish list on Steam.
Oh my god.
Because you brought it up, I remember to do it.
I'm about to be buying it for that wish list.
Before I forget, without spoiling actual like location of like state or anything, as far as where you are, I can't remember. Are you north or south of it? Like that, because I'm going out that way soon. And I was like, that'd be interesting to bump into you.
I'm in North Carolina, California. If that's
Okay. Well, no spoiler. I guess you're okay. In that case, now are you north or south California?
A lot of people live in California. Like,
I think I'm North California.
Some people are like, people know their shit.
Well, basically, Purnell, like, let's connect on the DMs because I would love for you to come out. And then you can play Caverna with me, which I just revisited this weekend. I rebought it because that's one of the things that we lost in the flood. But now we have repurchased Caverna, which is one of my favorite Uwe Rosenberg games, and we repurchased Feast for Odin. And every time.
Oh, you did buy Feast. I was about to say, the fact that you bought that again and not Feast for Odin, but he was like, no, I bought Feast for Odin too. Like, well, there that goes. You bought them both.
I got a holler towel
over here. I got to start up and try, actually.
Ooh, I haven't tried that. But send me some details and let's coordinate. I'd love to meet you IRL. That'd be a blast. And then Purnell can like record from my place. It'd be hilarious.
Hi, I'm in California, guys. The sun is out. I'm wearing shorts. What the fuck?
He's like, there sure are a lot of anime figures here on this desk. They're actually making me uncomfortable. They're like, shut up, Purnell.
This is a nice keyboard.
Tell the neighborhood.
Well, now I got to go back and listen to that episode I wasn't on. So
I'll send you some notes. Don't worry about it.
I mean, I can listen to a podcast, but no, I mean, yeah.
I mean,
either
you
way.
Shouldn't. You should. There's no reason to listen to this show.
No, that's how you banter.
Except for quality reviews.
Of which,
away we go.
Everyone ready to dive into these?
Ready.
Yeah.
Yes.
All right. First game to talk about tonight is The Last Orcrew, developed by Golden Knights, published by Prime Matter, released October 13th on Xbox Series X and S, PS5, and PC for $39.99. The Last Orcrew is a story-driven action RPG that puts you in the middle of an ongoing conflict between two races on a partly terraformed planet isolated from outer space by a protective barrier. Your decisions will bring interesting twists into the gameplay as you can heavily influence the conflict and its outcome. You'll experience hundreds of intense fights in a brutal medieval meets sci-fi world where every decision has its consequences. Tim, tell us about your time with The Last Orcrew.
Hey, Cards of Rebel Tropical Island is celebrating Halloween with a spooky event.
Dude, I actually did not know that. You're blowing my mind. I'm going to look this up right now.
Yeah, I said it out loud just in case you had played the game, put it down, and walked away and didn't realize there was something spooky you could do.
I had it pulled up on my computer right in front of me, and I'm immediately reading about this spooky event. I'm so happy right now.
We love spooky events.
That's cool. All right, I guess we got to talk about this game. So The Last Orcrew. Oh my goodness. This is game has got a weird setup of just like looking at the trailer. I'm like, why does this look like there's some kind of Roman medievalish society and like rat people, but also space and like sci-fi stuff? Like, what is going on in this game? And easily the best part of this game is the fact that they have created a pretty different setup for a world, to spare myself saying interesting again. It is unique. I didn't want to say that word either. It's forbidden words. It's just like, yeah, I was like, yeah, I don't know what's going on here. I don't understand. They're talking about a spaceship. They're talking about getting off this planet. There's rat people. Like, it feels like these elements shouldn't mix, but yet here they are. And yeah, there's a lot of the game fooled me up front. Like, I thought I was walking into more of like a Dragon Age RPG type deal, but it's actually more of a Souls like RPG type deal, except that they have layered in a lot more storytelling and decision making and stuff. the intro to this game is whack. Your character, his name is Silver. You don't get to pick the name. He's named Silver. You don't get to customize what he looks like. Oh, wait, excuse me. You can choose whether he has a shaved head or a weird looking half shaved head. And that's it. That's the extent of character creation, for this guy. It's like you wake up because your character can never die. He wears this belt that makes him resurrect if he gets killed, and everybody knows this. Everyone's well aware of this. It's fine. But you don't remember shit, and like you're in this temple with like some other people who are like, okay, cool, we're gonna like give you some responsibility and have you do some things, and you're like, okay, cool. And then there's these rat people walking around who are like, we're oppressed, don't be shitty to us. And the game is like very rapidly trying to like acclimate you to this world and the fact that choices matter and you're going to make decisions and this is how combat works and this is what's over here and this is what's over there. It all happens very, at least in my opinion, happened very fast, because before I knew it, it was like, okay, I'm just kind of like, okay, I got time to kind of like muddle around and like do some of these quests and like figure things out. But then it was like, oh wait, nope, I died fighting a guy, but the story keeps moving forward. And now we're moving on to the next step of the story where like the queen is showing up and like everyone's very upset about this and I need to hide. And they put me, I am responsible for hiding this thunder staff, which seemed like a bad idea up front. But yeah, you have to like, presumably as they present it to you, you then have to stealthily hide the staff without any of the guards seeing you. But I wouldn't know how the fuck that goes, because the second I stepped out from behind cover, the guard nearest to me did a quick 180 and was like, there you are, you're in trouble. All shit breaks loose. They throw me into the dungeon, and this guy is giving me mountains of shit for like failing on a quote unquote simple task. And I don't know, like at that point I was looking to like reload a save, because I was like, well, I want to, you know, try and do that and like see how it goes. But you know that you, no, this is where the game suddenly starts becoming very Dark Souls-y, in that you don't have multiple saves, so you're not going to be going back and redoing your choices. So yeah, and then after that point, you kind of enter the game. Not even, you don't even enter the game proper. Like you get like a little intro to the game proper, where you're in this dungeon, and then off to the side through a broken wall is like this big computer AI blue glowing thing, which serves as essentially your bonfire in this game. And it doesn't, it's very light on the explanation for this. It's just like, okay, that's my bonfire. Now I'm going to start wandering around and like finding weapons and engaging in combat. And the goal at this point is to just get yourself off the island, at which case the game's late title slate shows up in dramatic fashion as you reach the mainland and then go on for further adventures. Which was almost a point in the game I didn't make it to, because boy is the combat not good. According to my note here, combat is shit.
I didn't think the combat itself was shit. I think the biggest issue with this game right off the bat, there's no invert camera on build of the game. It was apparently removed because it caused some kind of game breaking issue, and it's going to come back apparently, but as of the last time I played it, there was no invert camera option, and this game is fucking impossible if you're an invert player.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that is true. Though, you know, thankfully I was able to play the game because you told me about that little thing about using the Xbox accessories to set a profile for yourself to just invert the controls. And it's just like, yeah, without that, I would not be talking about this game right now at all, because like I played like the first tutorial fight and I was feeling ill for an hour afterwards. It triggered my motion sickness so bad. Because even besides that, the camera moves like way super too fast. Like, yeah, like I dropped it to zero and I'm like, this is still really fast. Like, I don't know what would happen. It default is 20%. 100%, I'm sure the camera just rips out the side of your TV. You just go into orbit. But, you know, that aside, that is a big problem. And if you are on some sort of a platform or in this situation where you cannot invert your camera through back end means, and you are an invert player, just forget about it, because you're going nowhere. Presumably that's something they're going to add back in. The game is very light on options even besides that. There was like three options in the menu. I am never a fan of games like that, but either way, yeah, the combat, so it is set up like Dark Souls combat in that your attacks and actions are up there on the shoulder buttons, and there's a dodge down there on B. What got me is that, you know, you're you have very deliberate, you know, swings with your weapon when you push the button. So you have to kind of time it appropriately. You can't just sit there and mash. And it took me a bit to figure out, like, why is this going so badly? And it's because the enemies knock off your stamina as well as your life when they hit you. And that's bad, because you need stamina to get away, to move, to dodge, to defend. And they will just... they stagger you very easily, even besides that. And I was just having just the worst time trying to even... I really wanted this, like, to pull these pieces together of the combat over here and what they were trying to do with the story, because I think the story bit and the choices, like, that's interesting. And I'm just trying to pull that piece over to touch the combat in such a way that I'm like, okay, I can just tolerate this doofy-ass combat. So I can just see where things are going. And I just could not do that. I was just like so frustrated with it. And then I was just like, I'm going to give this game another shot. And that's when I made it to the main island. And I was like, okay, well, at least I'm getting somewhere now. they have, you know, there is an equipment system. You will find gear around it. Not the best explanations for how anything works. It's interesting that a lot of the rings I was picking up, like, would pull stats from one, from, like, your strength and put it into intelligence or vice versa, as a way of helping you kind of juggle stats around to equip weapons and hone your build, as it were. Not that I had a lot of options presented to me. It was just like, well, I have this weapon and I gotta lean into it. Though as soon as I started picking up magic stuff, I was like, oh man, I wish I was smarter, literally with more intelligence. But yeah, and those, I had a tough time just like reading those menus, trying to figure out what was what. The game tries to explain some things, but does not really try to explain others. Game is janky, just in general. I saw text just scrolling. The text, I could not read the full line of text because it just terminated at the right side of the text window. Importantly, and this was what really stabbed me through the heart with this game, is like a Souls game, you drop your pile of shit when you die, your whatever your experience substance is, you drop it in like a blue pile. And one time, my pile just was not there. Just disappeared. I didn't die twice. It just wasn't there. It was just gone. Forever. I'm like, wow. Okay, I looked around. I looked all around the area. I'm like, well, maybe it has some trigger where it dropped, like, you know, because in Dark Souls or whatever, it drops like a little bit before you died. Sometimes, depending, like if you like went running, it'll be a little bit before where you died precisely. And I'm like, okay, is it over here? Is it over here? Is it over here? And just like, no, nothing, nowhere. Which was the point at which my wife intervened, and she was like, "Tim, you need to stop playing this game. Like, this is not good." Also worth noting though is the game does have split screen couch co-op. That's a thing that it has. The only person I had available generally to sit down and do that with me would have been my child, but I didn't want CPS called on me for having him play this game. It's just mean. Yeah, woof. It is mean. I thought it was a good joke, so I figured I'd use it.
That was a good
I don't
joke.
Mean it that bad. I think it is a cool, like, because you don't see that in games like this, and I think that's really cool.
I mean, it has online co-op too, so it's not
split screen. But it does have split screen, which I do think is cool.
It's cool that it has split screen. More
is games a cool need thing to have.
Screen.
Yeah, or just like in this genre, I think it's cool to have it as an option ready to go. But the problem is, you still have to play this game, which was not very good to play at all.
I want to throw a couple issues I had with it as well. You mentioned how you just immediately failed some missions without realizing what the hell you were doing. I wish there was a little bit more warning when you were going to go to like a point of no return.
Yeah.
It would be nice to get a heads up. Like, hey, if you talk to this person, you're not going back anywhere. Anything else.
They are very big on like, oh, there is no wrong playthrough. Just let it happen.
Yeah.
But still, you know, you want to have some agency in what you're doing. You want to have that agency to know, like, oh, okay, like, something's happening here. I should be aware, you know? And it just, it can happen very suddenly. It is not obvious.
And then just overall, the game, it has that Eurojank feel where they're from Prague, so it fits.
Yeah.
I even looked it up to see where they were from to see if Eurojank would fit it. And I say that lovingly because I enjoy the Eurojank genre. I mean, the games aren't perfect, but they have heart.
Yes.
And that's nice to see in games. This one, it's just, it's rough around the edges, but I think there's something good there if they can smooth down the edges.
Get that sander out. Get that power sander.
Yeah, well.
Yeah, certainly. Like I said, I don't want to understate that they have something good going on with the story and stuff. But, yeah, playing the game.
Well, it's $40. What's your verdict?
No! don't buy this in its current state. Maybe it'll get some work and get, you know, smooth out some things, some tweaks to make it a bit more playable. But right now, it would be $40. That's a pretty tall order.
All right, well, next game is Sunday Gold, developed by BKOM Studios, published by Team 17, released October 13th on Steam for $21.99. Sunday Gold is a point-and-click turn-based adventure game set in a grim dystopian future, plays a ragtag trio of criminals to hunt down and expose the dark secrets of an evil megacorporation and the malevolent billionaire behind it. Purnell, what's going on in Sunday Gold? Purnell?
Good talk.
Purnell, check that out.
Not a hell of a lot going on.
Purnell's probably in the bathroom right now, and he's just like, shit.
No, I was on mute and didn't unmute, so I'm sitting talking like, what? And then, shut up, Price. I was starting to talk, and then Tim says something. I was like, what? What's going on? Would I miss a joke? And then when Joe was like, I can't hear you, I was like, oh, fuck. Well, I did curse. We're right about that. But what's going on in Sunday Gold is what I consider to be a bit of a surprise hit for me in the year of 2022. I developed an interest in the game because I saw one of the rare times where an advertisement worked, because I looked at it. It seemed very interesting as far as like the aesthetics went and all that, and the promise of a point-and-click/RPG, and that was just kind of right up my alley, and it delivers. The idea behind this game that you control three, you know, not so much friends as they are like unlikely companions, who kind of stumble across a corporate conspiracy while trying to do something that initially was a small-time job in a weird dystopian future as criminals. And you progress through the game by way of a series of chapters to unravel the narrative. Progression in this game, however, is a little different than what I'm used to when it comes to point-and-click games. The RPG part, not too different, but I'll get into that. What happens is you control all three characters, and, well, when the situation applies, sometimes there'll be one or two or three, but for the most part, you control these characters, and every character has a set number of action points associated with them. In typical point-and-click adventure standards, you can scroll your mouse around the environment that you're placed in and click on things to get more information about them, walk up to them, and manipulate or interact with them. However, some actions you perform will require use of your AP points, which will deplete whether or not you're successful in the event that some of the actions involve mini games that you need to perform to succeed. Once you run out of AP and can't do anything else, you have to end your turn and rest your characters to get their AP back. At this time, there is a awareness gauge that exists in the upper right corner of the screen. And depending on the circumstances of the event you're taking place in or what's going on, that may go up or go down, which could impact combat. Did I say combat? Yes, I did say RPG earlier, so of course there is. Because sometimes, whether during the rest period or while engaging with characters in the game, you can enter combat. When you do enter combat, you carry over the AP you had during the adventure phase. And AP is also used to activate your different attacks and skills. So, in the event that you weren't very smart about, you know, walking around and exploring on a full AP setup, you might find yourself in a situation where you go into battle having to guard your characters so that they can spend a turn recovering AP. But at least they'll have their defense buffed up in the meantime, so it's not a total loss. The different characters have a variety of different attack types. There's like slashing, blunt objects. There's like characters who can use handguns. You can interact with machines and actually hack the machines with the hacker character in the game. And there's, of course, like group attacks, individual attacks, or status effects, all the hickey-dicky that you're used to hearing about when it comes to RPG combat. One thing I like about this game, though, both in combat and in the actual adventure sequences, though, is that the characters are very fun to watch interact with each other. They have good witty banter. They seem like the sort of people that you could watch a TV show about or something if it came down to it, because similar to a number of other games, like a lot of people, maybe not so much Persona 5, but, you know, maybe I will say that. It's just not as long, so you don't get to know them as long. But I had that kind of rapport with some of these characters. I'm like, you know, I like hearing what they have to say. I want to hear more about them as they engage with each other. And plus, I'm a sucker for freaking British accents. Of course, blimey, the freaking diggity, you know, whatever, that kind of thing. I'm a big fan.
I like how frequently they mention how foul-mouthed they are on the store page, too.
Oh, they get salty. They do get salty and a little bit grimy, too, and just the way I like it. Another interesting aspect about this game, too, is there's, like, in addition to, like, your normal, you know, additional AP points and your hit points, there's also a composure gauge. Composure is pretty much how well you're doing in the given situation that you're facing at any given time. And the lower that composure goes, the worse off your characters can be. So it starts out at 100, obviously. Depending on where you're searching on the adventure screens, it could go down or go up. For example, if you come across a dead body, you have to investigate it. The characters who's investigating might just flat out be uncomfortable doing it. It's like, oh, crap, blood. This is disgusting. Composure down, minus 10. And it's like, shit. And sometimes, depending on how low it gets, interesting effects might happen. You might start hallucinating. You might start seeing, like, words pop up on the screen. So, like, loser, you're full of it, basically, if just the right character. Because they all react to low composure differently. Some might actually even slightly benefit because their erratic actions might cause, you know, more damage. But it could almost like rage in a game where the more damage will be on the enemies, even if they might occasionally attack you, too, in a sort of, like, confusion state. But overall, you typically don't want your composure to get too low because it does have risky results. So you can take drugs, painkillers, shots, alcohol, whatever, to get your composure back up to snuff. And I kind of like dealing with that, too. As your characters level up by either getting experience points in battle or from completing various events and mission objectives while you're exploring, you will gain AP points, which will allow you to boost up your character's skill trees. Each character has 4 skill lines. They learn the skills themselves as they level up, but the AP can be used to buff the skills and make them stronger. So you might face, for example, wanting, you know, buff up Sally, who is surprisingly both the tank in the party and also the medic. You might want to buff up her patch up skill, which I kind of blew a ton of my AP on because it's like the only non-item based healing skill that I can't get to come across for a while. So you'll make use of that to pretty much, you know, juice your characters up when they're in a pinch. It only costs 2 AP, so all the better. And you can also do things like, you know, reduce the cost of on-field AP actions like hacking or block picking or burly acting antics. So they keep you engaged. The only thing that was really giving me real grief in the game, and it's not really grief so much as just like, I got to do that again, is the occasional bit of inventory management that takes place because it's all mouse and keyboard. So you'll pretty much have to find yourself a case of going, crap, that character can't have this item. This character needs to have the item for this event. So you got to go into the inventory, move the item to this guy when you don't want to. Wouldn't be such a big deal for normal items because that's typical banter in games. You want to have certain characters using certain items. Like, you know, one character does a better job of healing people when she uses the items that heal you as opposed to others. So junk her stuff up with all the good items for healing. But aside from that, it wasn't such a big deal. The Steam Deck, I tried using it for this game, and it does work, but it came with its own bit of issues. It uses, again, it still maintains the whole mouse and keyboard bit, mostly the mouse, but there's keyboard hotkeys, which you can obviously not access on the Steam Deck. So it made me get used out of the touchpads for the first time, and I'm not sure if Tim has messed with these at all at any point, but while they are effective for small time, like quick uses, you don't want to have to use them for when the majority of your antics involve using the mouse over and over again to scroll around. It wasn't all that. I wasn't fond of that so much. So it was good to play on the go here and there, but not my full-time console of choice. So I went back to the laptop for this bad boy. But it was worth the trip back to the laptop because I think the game is solid. It's fun. It doesn't wear out as welcome. And if you're the type of person who kind of has a bit of the ADHD, you don't have to worry about the RPG element of having to explore and figure out, okay, I want to get lost on these random side quests because the game kind of keeps you going at a pace. There are side missions, so to speak, but they're typically lumped into what you're trying to actually accomplish. So you'll stay focused the whole way through. Sunday Gold is Sunday Gold.
Is it Tuesday Gold?
Yes, it is. I would say this is a solid buy product. Worth your time, money, and British chop antics.
Sounds good.
Nice.
Cool. Blimey, it is. Actually, that's more like that could be Irish too, but whatever. I think it's
British. Crikey.
Crikey, course, Snipe.
Blimey.
Never get the movie guy on here.
Yeah, you got to say it in a voice that's not at all British, like, Cor Blimey.
Pip, pip, and all that.
Pip, pip.
Bloody raw.
Cheerio.
Hey, we're committing war crimes right now, guys.
Yeah, we really are.
Settle down.
Next the important game. Part is we at least acknowledge it.
We shouldn't. Next game is Them's Fightin' Herds, developed by Main Six, published by Modus Games, released October 18th on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, PS5 for $19.99. Them's Fightin' Herds is a 2D fighting game featuring a cast of adorable animals designed by acclaimed cartoon producer Lauren Faust. Beneath the cute and cuddly surface, a serious fighter awaits. Tim, tell us about your time with Them's Fightin' Herds.
Them's Fightin' Herds. Yeah, so I didn't realize this game wasn't already out on everything. Apparently, it's just been on PC for its existence. Yeah, so for those that you don't know, this was originally a fan-made My Little Pony game called Fighting is Magic, until they got cease and desisted, and then this beautiful game about fighting animals came into being. It's a game that I played a long time ago at MAGFest. Now it is here out for us, fully formed. Yeah, this is a cool little independent fighting game about fighting like horses. There's a alpaca, there's like a unicorn type deal. Yeah, these are herding animals, a cow, yeah, stuff like that. And you're like, why would I want to play this? It's like, well, because it's why would I do this? This, I don't know. This doesn't make sense. And it's because it's a pretty good game. That's why, really. Pardon me. Excuse me again. Brains. Yeah. So you got, the game. There's only 7 characters in the game. I will just get that out of the way out of the front. That's kind of like the big downside for me, is there's just like not a lot of characters, especially compared to like a lot of contemporary fighting games, which have a ton of them. But, you know, this is a smaller game, smaller developer, all that stuff. But it's still good. It is focused in that regard. And you got basically everything you need to have a jolly good time playing a fighting game here in the package. So you have your expected modes of, you know, local versus an arcade mode. There's online play. The game has really good netcode. It has the rollback netcode that everybody wants to see in their fighting games. So it is a good fighting game to play online. There is a training mode, which has all kinds of, you know, goodies in it for turning on hitboxes, turning off hitboxes, so you can see exactly what's going on. Notably, this game has a robust story mode, and unlike, you know, other fighting games where it's just kind of like, you see some cutscenes, and then there's a fight, and then you see some more cutscenes, this has, like, this drops you into an overworld adventure game. Really? Where you are, yeah, you're walking around in a top-down open world, and it essentially works in such a way that it is teaching you how to play a fighting game through the story mode chapters, and that you'll kind of come up to a scene and you'll cut to, you know, a 2D side-scrolling view with the character. Arizona is the main character of the story mode, who is a little calf. Don't know if she's graduated to full cow status. But, yeah, and it's like, okay, well, here's a little bit of simple platforming so you can learn how to jump. Like, okay, now you have to fight these wolves, and you need they're going to jump at you. So you specifically need to use an anti-air attack against them. So it teaches you this is what your anti-air attack does. It'll teach you about dashing, positioning, blocking, like cross-ups, all through these different levels with different characters as the story progresses. And it's pretty genius, I think. Like, I've never seen anything like it in a fighting game before. Like, it harkens back to when the Soul Calibur games had, like, the Edgemaster mode, where you'd go around to different nodes on a map, and, you know, you'd have to defeat an enemy without using this attack, or while using this attack, or you can only use do damage in the air, and it kind of inadvertently taught you different techniques about the game. It's something akin to that, which is really cool. And yeah, I like, if you're buying this game, you're probably going to be taking it online or playing against other people anyway, but that is a cool little thing. Like, if you are new to fighters and it has this, you know, at least you have that to play through and check out, and it'll teach you some things about how to play a fighting game before you dive right in there. And it has regular, like, challenge modes, like, and basic tutorial stuff that'll teach you about the basics of the game's mechanics and systems and all that anyway. But all this, I guess, would be worthless if the fighting was no good. But the fighting is good. It uses a four-button system where you have light, medium, heavy, and a magic button. You will have, you know, each character has special moves. They have EX versions of special moves, which means it's just powered-up versions of those moves, and everyone just uses the Street Fighter 4 lingo. When you do the same command and you hit the magic button, a more powerful version of the special will come out, uses a bit of meter. Yeah, you have super attacks. You have super attacks that use all three levels of meter. You have dashing, super jumping, just all kinds of... It's just a really solid little fighter. Like I said, the only drawback is that there's only seven characters, and I can't believe they haven't added more. Apparently there was a DLC version or character who I did not see in my time playing this one. I just kind of would have assumed that for this release they would have just stuck him in there, but seems not, or I just missed something because I'm oblivious sometimes.
They do have a season pass available. There's the game's $20, and then there's a season pass available for $20, which will include four more characters.
Okay, so they're adding a bunch more characters to the game. That's cool. That's good.
Each with a quote unique stage and pixel lobby avatar.
That's good. How much is the season pass? Did you say that was another 20? Yep. Or is that 10 or 15? 20 for that, 20 for the season pass.
Yeah, so you could, or you could buy everything together for 40, which math works.
That does not save you money. Nope, but
not all.
It costs you the same amount of money, but you're getting it all out of the way.
One penny more if you buy it that
look,
way.
You're better off, I'll tell you right now, you're better off spending $40 on this than that other game I talked about. For sure. But yeah, so that's good. And that, you know, it only has seven characters. That's not an overwhelming number of characters to learn, to find a favorite in there. And then, you know, the roster is going to expand, and presumably the game and community are going to grow from here now that it's on consoles. So it, like, the game has already had, like, good buzz. You know, it's not like Evo main stage, but it is respected. It's got some chops, so it would be cool to see that community grow.
Well, the game is $20. What is your official verdict?
Yeah, it is worth buying. Well worth it. It is a quality fighting game product, and it's something I think you can have a lot of fun with. And maybe, you know, if you're apprehensive, I feel like I've reviewed a lot of fighting games this year. If you're apprehensive about diving into a $60 fighting game purchase, like, there you go. That is a third of the money. That's math. Right there.
It is. Or two-thirds if you go with the deluxe edition.
Yeah, let's not get into that yet. But yeah. Then if you like it, then you get the season pass. You get more characters. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Tim, that's it for you.
Yeah, Tim, go sleepy bye. Next week I talk about I guess before I go, I could give a couple words on Modern Warfare 2, which I'm playing and reviewing for next week, though all I can play is the campaign right now.
Yeah. It was week early access on campaign?
Yeah, early. Yeah, if you had the game, I think it was last Thursday or maybe it was Friday. If you'd already pre-purchased the game, which, you know, we got the review code, thank you. You could start playing the campaign like over a week before the game came out, which is cool. But yeah, all the online stuff goes live this weekend. I am excited to check out the new Warzone, maybe play a little bit more of the multiplayer. And I should be finishing up with the campaign by then, but I've been having a pretty solid time with it. So far, there's been some pretty crazy sequences.
Nice.
That I'm. Well,
sounds like we have a lot to look forward to next week.
I hope it doesn't take a dark turn, like from where I am now. It's like, yeah, all the rest of the missions suck ass. Sorry.
No. Guy came to my door and just started punching me in the face. He said it was because I played the game.
Yeah. So, I mean, so far my favorite, there's a mission where like you start out in a helicopter and like you're chasing down a convoy down a highway, and you start in the helicopter and then you get knocked out of it. And then you're hanging upside down from the helicopter, like with traffic coming at you and you shooting at guys upside down before you hijack a vehicle and then drive the vehicle. And you're like hanging out the window and shooting people from there and then jumping to different vehicles when yours is about to blow up. It is insane nonsense.
Weren't these like war simulators once upon a time?
Once upon a time, that time is not now.
Dark times.
I mean, they were already, you know, swerving up into Michael Bay territory even back then. But there was a bit more gravitas to some of the stuff that happened in those first couple games. But they are just rip roaring right off the rails with this one for some of the stuff. That's a standout moment for sure. But it was pretty crazy. Just like, what are you doing? All right, I'll catch you guys later.
All right, later. We will talk to you next week.
Yep. Have a good night, Tim.
All right, next up is A Winding Path, developed and published by Flynn's Arcade, released October 27th on Switch for $6.99. A Winding Path is a hand-drawn adventure game about finding the beauty of the world and enjoying the little things. Explore the atmosphere of ancient caverns, enchanting forests, and busy settlements. Help colorful characters and find the rain and unveil its magic. The Rainmaker awaits. Brooke, what is going on in A Winding Path?
Yo, there's a lot going on in this game, deceptively. You know, when you showed me this game, I wasn't really sure how good this could be. When I checked out some of the screenshots for it, I thought it would be charming, but I saw the characters were literally stick figures. But that being said, this game is incredibly alive. This one took me by surprise. It's really, really immersive. If you check out the art, that may come as a surprise. And it's very enchanting. I whipped out the word enchanting for like a total of 4 games I've reviewed for the show. And I'm whipping it out now because this game earned it. It's enchanted the living hell out of me. It's got a great story, amazing narrative. It just holds a surprisingly deep and well-crafted world in there for $6.99, which is insane. I actually didn't know it was that cheap. I thought this was more like a $15 game. But yeah, you start the game as a stick figure character that you control, and you're only able to walk left or right down a path that does wind across the screen in an interesting way. In addition to walking left or right, you can also press A to interact with something, but you don't have a cursor to move around the screen. You can only interact with something that's right in front of your character. And most of the time, you can only interact with stuff if you're right in front of it and you see a blinking arrow next to the thing as you walk by it or next to your head. You start out in kind of an intro tutorial level, but the game doesn't totally have like a full tutorial since it has so few controls. It just lets you walk around and start to figure things out, talk to NPCs, go in and out of buildings, solving a couple little riddles that are also like puzzle adjacent, just generally figuring out how interacting with the different parts of the environment you're in will help you advance. So now that I'm describing it, I know this sounds similar to a point-and-click adventure game, but it's really not that. It's very mechanically and narratively very different than that, in my opinion. This is a super refreshing experience that I haven't totally had before. I think this game definitely offers something unique, if you will. While the art for this game, thank you. While the art for this game is really simple, it's really doing its own thing. And while it's graphically and mechanically really different than a game like, say, Fez, it does actually remind me of Fez and environmental, lightly puzzling but immersive games like that. That are doing a lot with not the most advanced graphics. It has a very similar charm and like just environmental immersiveness to it as that game does. Incredible soundscape. But yeah, this game really feels alive. It just feels like a really deep, special piece of art that just really sucks you in. When I play a game that tries to get me into like an adventure-y, wondrous, like very curious mood, I'm either not in the mood for it at all, and then it's never going to work anyway, or I'm kind of not in the mood for like jumping around and in a like a wondrous, adventuresome game. And the game will get me into that mood just by being intriguing, kind of sucking you in. This is one of the latter games, which I think is always an achievement in gaming. You know, you don't really have to. Some games you try and you don't like them, and you come back later and you do like them, and you're like, wow, I guess I was just in a shitty mood. And although that happens to me a lot, like this game, for me, it didn't matter what mood I was in. It kind of sucked me in and made me feel how it wanted me to feel, which is really cool. Playing through this, controls rise. It reminds me a bit of Fez, a bit of Baba Is You. And it really reminded me of playing like a really immersive and fun, well-crafted D&D campaign, specifically with the descriptive narrative style that couples well with the simple graphics that help you imagine what's going on as you walk through the world. So this game, you do end up being able to do more than just move left or right. By the end of the sort of intro tutorial-esque level, you have an instrument in your inventory that you've gotten by going on a little quest, and you can play it by using the right stick controller. There are lots of different notes you can play on your instrument, and you can use it to play a bunch of notes in succession, basically in any order and rhythm, to summon rain clouds. That's the first thing you can do with it. And once you use those rain clouds to make a beanstalk grow out of the ground so you can reach a hot air balloon and fly away, there you are, you're floating away to the next level and to the rest of the game. So while this game certainly is accessible, it's not physically challenging to navigate around in. It doesn't hold your hand either. You may want to take notes on what people tell you and really think about those notes if you want to do everything in this game. You're not going to have to take notes to beat the game, probably, unless you're me. But it is going to make you think. It is going to make you think, and it's going to require you to treat this game like a real environment and use some critical thinking skills. But it's also not relying super heavily on riddle puzzle that every game seems to do. So yeah, this game has a ton of content for this price, and I had this written in my notes before I heard Joe say the actual price just now. I thought this was more in the $15 to $20 range. So I was going to say this either way. This game has a ton of content for the price. It has some enormous levels and scenes with animated towns, forests, mountains, lots and lots of specific NPCs everywhere. No real like stat raising, but tons of like almost side quests and lots of things to do in the environment that aren't quests, aren't riddles, just things to interact and play with that aren't really going to do anything except bring you some amusement if you like tinkering around. Earlier, I was walking around in a woods that this game has, and I saw this little bird in a tree, and I was like, yo, what if I play him a little tune? And long story short, there's no quest connected to that bird. There is like one special kind of weird Easter egg thing you can get it to do after a while. But there's plenty of stuff you can do with this bird that isn't going to do anything other than just let you play with it. And yeah, we hung out and we jammed out and made some music for like 20 minutes, and it was really dope. It was actually really magical. And to wrap up this review here, if I could pick one word to describe this game, it actually would be magical. And it's not every game I feel that way about. And it's a really special game that can make me feel that way with this graphics, this level of graphics. In addition to all the other stuff I like about it, it's, you know, got one of the very best sound designs I've ever come across. So yeah, you could probably tell this is a buy it from me, far and away. At the end of the day, I actually feel really lucky to have played this game, and I wasn't in a great mood starting it out, but it did bring me in. It was fun and memorable, really got me into a sense of wondery and discovery type mood, made me want to check out everything I could in the game. It really just reminded me of some of the more special experiences I've had in both video games and role-playing campaigns. If you like reading, if you like exploring and tinkering around, if you like to read as a kid and you can appreciate a simply drawn yet incredibly immersive game, I severely, heavily recommend this game to you.
Nice. And I like how you say simply drawn, but it's very detailed when you look at it. It's really, really cool visual style.
It really is, and I didn't want to, like, I have to be careful not to, like, babble too long or make my reviews too long, so I try to rein it in the notes, but I was hoping that anyone looking it up will see that, like, it does have a really intricate style. While the people are stick figures, it's actually got a really pretty shaded terrain going on, and if you like the idea of a bisection of terrain, like, yeah, I want to undersell the visuals, because I certainly don't want to, like, promise anything it's not going to do, but just like everything else in the game, after you spend a few minutes in it, it kind of opens up and you're like, whoa, this is not exactly what I thought this was. This game is doing more than I expected. Yeah, and I really loved it. Honestly, Joe, thanks for tossing me this one. It really perked me up on a weird week.
Nice. I'm glad that it cheered you up. And yeah, it's only $7. So it seems like when it's out, it's something that people should check out.
So good. And if you play this and you want somebody to like scream at, we're not very famous people. Find me on Twitter or something or DM me. And I would love to talk about this game with you. That's my favorite thing, talking about a game like this that really like surprises you and stands out in a collection of games and just feels special.
And you talking about just sitting and playing with the bird for 20 minutes just makes me think of Jacob being high off his ass with the game, just talking to a bird for 20 minutes. Like, hey, bird,
yeah,
what are you doing?
That was honestly a really nice interaction in the environment. There's tons of stuff like this, but yeah, like you're bringing me into a final secret hidden point here. If you smoke weed, you're gonna fucking love this game. Get this game. You'll freak out. And if you're Jacob, get this game. I might get this for you, dude. If you're listening to this and you call me out on it, this game is yours. I'll buy it for you right now.
Careful, Brooke. You're putting out all kinds of offers lately. Like, hey, I'm going to buy this game for 5 people. Go buy this game for everybody on the show. Go
hey,
buy
but this guess game what? Hey, but you weren't there for the Thursday raffle. I put my money where my mouth is. You know, I say I'm going to get it, I will. And I am such...
What's the chosen game?
I'm going to... What was it? I already forgot.
Ghostbusters.
I bought like... Oh, yeah. Joe had to like teach me how to buy like an Xbox gift card online. So thanks to Joe for tutoring me like that. But yeah, like Purnell, you raise an interesting point. Sometimes I will buy people games just because I really want to talk about them that badly. And now as my final act before I exit the show right now, I will put Chris on the spot and say what? About 25 minutes ago, I actually bought you Card Survival Tropical Island because I really want you to play it.
Aw, thanks.
And Purnell, if you fuck with me, I'm going to buy you that card game too, and then I'm going to guilt you. I'm going to guilt you until you play. I know you're going to love it.
Don't do it, Purnell. Don't do it.
If you fuck with me, I'm buying you a card game. You're going to fucking play it, and you're going to fucking like it.
This is a really good impression of me, Joe.
Well, I'm gonna lie, shoot. Consider yourself fucked with, because that'd be hilarious just to be like, oh, fail, big your face.
Submit yeah. your Steam name, buddy.
Submit How about you don't have this? It'd be just Purnell, but it has the magical drop character's face on it.
Ooh, okay, I'm gonna look for you. All right, but I'm gonna go for the night. Thank you guys.
Hey, well, Brooke, thank you as always for coming and hanging out with us. Do you have any final words before we let you go?
That's it. I think I've said more than enough here.
It's never enough from you. You're a great person, and we will miss you. Until next time.
Look how nice he's being now that I buy him. Again, no, I just came.
What about to say? I'm nice to you in general, because you're just solid people. And you know it.
You are. Purnell's actually really nice. All right, night-night, you guys. Later.
Night-night.
All right, next game is War Pips, developed by Skirmish Mode Games, published by Daedalic Entertainment, released October 12th on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, and PS5 for $19.99. War Pips is what would happen if classic strategy game and a tug-of-war game had a baby made out of tanks and napalm. Set loose the engine of war and watch the chaos of physics-based combat explode onto the battlefield. Assemble your army from a diverse roster of infantry, vehicles, and airplanes. Deploy troops, call down airstrikes, and launch missiles, all without that pesky micromanagement. Purnell, what's going on in War Pips?
What do they say without that pesky micromanagement? But man, keeping up with this game, sometimes you might feel like you're going, Mike, you're macromanaging. You're all over the goddamn place. It's an interesting bit of a game, actually. The idea behind it, the general sense anyway, because this is how every mode, no matter what mode you play, this is how the game typically works. You are on a map. It goes from left to right, with your base being on the left side and the opponent's base being on the right side. As time progresses, a few things will happen. Enemies will come from the right side to the left to try to destroy your facility. You will slowly accrue money. Just naturally accrue money. And aggression levels of the opponent will kind of shift on like a sort of time bar. So like the more time passes, the more changes will occur to the enemy's aggression bar. Now, what ends up occurring here is like, as you get enough money, you have a bar at the bottom of the screen that can be configured to contain a number of different character units. They're referred to as pips. They can range from anything from like a generic infantry soldier to like a munitions expert to a Doberman to all kinds of things. And you kind of scroll between these items and press the engagement button to summon that item onto the field. And in typically the item will go from left to right, with the intent being to destroy the opponent's base or any enemies in between. Now, you have no control over these people once they're on the board. So your hope and goal is that you can slowly over time press through the enemy line and destroy their base by just summoning the right units onto the field. But that's not to say that you can't do anything to support these guys while they're out and about on the field. If you happen to have anything like a bunker established, for example, in your loadout, you can place bunkers in key points on the map. They're noted by icons, so you can't just like dump it wherever. And you can go off further based on how far along your guys have pushed through the enemy line. But you can place a bunker down so that pips will just naturally kind of hunker up behind it and take cover while they fire on the opponent, which is kind of handy there. You can set up like barbed wire to kind of slow enemies down. And then there's all kinds of other crazy items you can put down on the field too, like EMPs, things that will like kind of attack air units if they come flying by, anti-air cannons and stuff like that. And there are the occasional objects that you can summon, which will allow you, the player, to kind of control it, like a cannon that allows you to manipulate a cursor and fire down on the field. But the cannon, of course, overheats over time and loses accuracy, so it's not just like this foolproof decimation gun. It's just slight support to support your units. Now, initially, you can only summon 3 units onto the field, but once you earn enough money, you can press a button to add 1 more available unit to the drop. So now you can suddenly summon 4 units. Now you can suddenly summon 5 units, and so on and so forth. In addition to that, you can also rank up units as a whole. So you don't rank up individuals, you rank up your entire army. As you kill enemies on the field, or correction, as your pips kill units for you on the field, you'll accrue experience points. And for each level you gain, you'll earn a medal, which can be used to either purchase like some war bonds, which is essentially more money, or you can use it to upgrade your units like in rank. And by upgrading your units in rank, you'll unlock 1 or 2 different tiers of upgrades. So, for example, generic infantry might get a little bit more accuracy in their shot, or they might be able to fire more bullets. So the game kind of tasks you with like juggling what you want to do. When do you want to do it? Because, again, you're not manipulating the actual units, but you're kind of managing what they do in the sense like, who do you summon? Where do you place this bunker? When do you fire these cannons? When do you upgrade your units? When do you make it so you can summon more units on the field at one time? And this all happens pretty fast. So like matches typically run no more than like 5 to 10 minutes. They go pretty fast. And in between levels, if you're doing the campaign mode, you will be able to take money that you earned and then go to like an in-game shop of sorts and upgrade your army by buying things like improved armor, improved gunfire, maybe better cannons so they don't overheat as quickly. You might be able to go to a quick shop that allows you to buy like one-time soldier uses and things of that nature. Because one other thing I need to mention, which is very important about this game, is the way you get units. If you do the campaign mode, you are tasked with going from one side of the map to the other, conquering locations as you go. You start out with a specific set of units you can summon, and when you summon them onto a stage, they're gone, which means you run out of them. So you have to earn more. And the way you earn more is as rewards for conquering different areas on the map. So that will kind of determine where you end up going when you go from stone to stone on the map, because this one might offer you Dobermans. This one might offer you 3 types of weak units, which is kind of good just to have fodder you can summon on the map. But at the same time, the overall goal is to reach the enemy base and conquer it. And the longer you take to explore the map by going from node to node instead of just going directly to the base, the stronger the enemy units become as a whole across the entire campaign. So they task you with kind of weighing your options, determining when, like, how aggressive you want to be towards advancing to the enemy base. I said a lot because there is a lot in this game. It's kind of funny. I didn't expect it to have this much going on. But once you start playing it, though, and you take your licks, maybe run 2 or 3 battles of just terrible, awful play style, you'll pick it up, and it'll start to make sense to you. And next thing you know, you'll be like, okay, gotta get these guys out.
But I will admit, occasionally I tend to forget what button does what on the stupid thing, which is kind of nice that they have a button that you can press, which will highlight what all the buttons do on the screen. Because I use that a lot. Maybe because I'm an old guy. I don't know. I'm 50 years old now. Sue me. But the game itself is actually pretty slick. The music is pretty good. It's very rocking. Keeps the tempo high. I like the map names you come across. They always have really dumb names like Operation, Pencil Shavings, or Operation, Rancid Goat Milk. Just weird names just for the chuckles or whatever. And I do feel like this may not be a game that everyone can get into, because again, the fact that you got to make decisions as real time passes and stuff, some people might not get down with that. But I feel like if you're okay with a little wacky tug of war, just seeing who can handle the left or the right side, and you don't mind dipping your toe into some little, I guess it's like a combination of pixels and voxels here. But if you're okay with getting down with that, I think this game is a good time to play, and it's worth your time.
Cool, it's $20. What is your official verdict?
I would give it a solid try because of the whole real-time part. Like, it's not a bona fide thing, and I know some people really don't click with that too well. But if you, give it a solid try, because I think this is worth attention, and I think more people should check it out, and it's likely going to go under the radar for many, many people, so dip your toe in it and see how it flows for you.
Cool. Yeah, this one looks pretty cute. I might give this one a go.
And it's funny you say that too, because it does look cute, but the game doesn't mince, it definitely shows the violence. When someone dies, blood's everywhere. Things explode, people die with explosions. It's pretty nuts.
Well, it's still only T-rated, so it's not that extreme.
No, everybody! Military might.
Next game is Sea Horizon, developed by Softstar Entertainment, published by East Asia Soft, released October 20th on the Switch for $14.99. In the world of Sea Horizon, every step counts as a journey of survival and high adventure. Sea Horizon is a roguelike turn-based RPG presented in a 3D bird's eye view of a hex grid map that's different every time you set out to explore the shattered archipelago of Mirin. Chris, what's going on in Sea Horizon?
Okay, so quite a lot. Sea Horizon, as it says on the box, is a roguelike game. It's kind of split up into a few different modes. So I'll just kind of take it in turn there. But basically, you've got you start off with three different characters to choose from. The roster expands, I believe, up to 12 or 13 characters eventually. I'm not exactly sure what they're purposes, because besides party members, which I'm about to get to, but they don't really tell you, like, they just have a lock on them and they don't really tell you how to unlock them, so just going by what the game says here. So you've got story mode, which you start off with a human swordsman, and if you can complete his adventure, then you unlock the lady kickboxing furry. And if you complete her story, then you get the little dwarf guy with a gun. great roster here. The way that the game works is that your character is put on a hex grid, which, if you've played a lot of strategy RPGs, you'll recognize it immediately. But it's basically, it's kind of like a square grid, but you can also move diagonally. So that's the whole point of it. It's not very tough. The kind of like tiles get uncovered as you move around them. Every move consumes food, of which you have 120, let's say, but moving like a few squares will cost like 4 food. A battle will cost like 2 food. It dwindles. And so if you can find a campsite, you can trade what's called anchor coins for some food. And how do you get anchor coins? You fight battles. So as you can see, it's a nice little circle of life here. If you wander onto a hexagon that has a skull on it, that will put you into a battle. Now, the battles occur, basically, your character's on one side of the screen, the other character's on the other side of the screen. Basically, what happens, it kind of acts like a card game in a sense. Like, you have, well, not really, I guess, but you do have cards. You have up to 5 of them that you can choose for your character. You gain more cards as you gain levels. Each card is a skill, and each skill consumes a certain kind of point. And each character has 3 kinds of points that they can use with their skills. So let's take your swordsman, for instance. He can use the sword magic and shield. And so, like, a certain move might consume one sword, one magic. And so if it then rolls the dice for however many dice rolls your character gets, which is dependent on their equipment. And let's say you have, like, six dice, whatever. Then it'll roll, you know, six dice, and they'll either be blank or a sword, magic, or a shield. Again, this depends on your armor type. Your armor type determines what that dice roll is going to look like. And so, basically, that's the way that the RPG version goes. You roll, if you get the, you know, sword and magic, so that you can use your sword and magic move, then you get to use that move for as many times as the card allows, and then the enemy takes a turn. It gets real intense, because that's like three layers of things that have to happen for you to get like the moves that you want and the combination that you want. And where this game is actually like really brilliant is that as you gain levels and gain equipment, you always gain equipment at the end of a fight, no matter what. If you choose not, you know, you basically have three things to choose from. Some of them are not even related to your character. Sometimes they're just items, like consumables you can use in battle. But if you choose not to do any of them, then you get a certain amount of anchor coins, which can, of course, help you again on the map. So, you know, nothing goes to waste. And so you get an item every time you win a battle, and you get, like, every two or so battles, two or three battles, depending on your level, you gain a level. And every level, you get a new skill that you can pick from three. So you can, it's a really good game about building the engine that, you know, lets the player be played the way you want to, like, play him, provided you, of course, draw the right cards. It gets addicting. Even though it's a roguelike, you know, it really does change every time you go in, because so many factors come into play, but also everything links up so nicely that, you know, if you're a little bit clever, you can really turn your character into a into, you know, whatever you kind of want. I usually go for a glass cannon type of character, so, you know, I would naturally want to gravitate towards all of the sword moves. Some of them are very decimating. And then, you know, just go all hell on the enemy until they, like, you know, hit me once and then kill me. But actually turned out for my sword guy, like, I was building up this shield build that was just incredible. Like, so, you know, rolling the right, you know, shield points could get you, like, these moves where you can gain a whole bunch of block points. And block points, of course, are, like, temporary HP. So the enemy hits your block points and depletes those before they get to your HP. So it's a very solid, you know, it's very easy to understand all the stats and, like, what they do. Like, that's really nice. And the game always has a description on hand to, like, tell you what does what. And it's a good thing too that the game is really easy about you know, telling you what everything does and, like, kind of giving you the right tools to actually get through a roguelike. Because roguelikes are very, they can be very daunting, because sometimes you just get crap and then you die. And then You're not motivated to, like, try and play it again. Whereas, and I'll get to that in a minute with this one. So in the swordsman story, the ending boss is a giant owl. And, like, it's an owl that looks like it's been, like, working out. It's like a barbarian owl. It's crazy. I would dare say it doesn't even look like an owl. Anyway, whereas your character might have, like, 100 HP, and the enemies you've been fighting started at, like, you know, 20 to 40 HP and then got up to, like, 100, 120 HP, this owl has freaking, like, 500 HP, and it hits hard. So at this point, you should have gained enough, like, of everything that you need to, like, actually survive this battle, which is an epic battle. And even though I didn't the first time, and I was about ready to be like, well, you know, the bosses are too hard, you know, in this review. No. I went back in and I beat that thing. And then I beat the furry story, and then I almost beat the dwarf story. So, yeah, like, I kept going back because this game really pulls you back in. Plus, here's the thing. The game will give you the opportunity to basically pile on, like, extra bonuses for your character the next time if they get killed, including, like, you get to choose from three cards that are like, hey, here's a boost if you like, or you can tell him to go to hell. Literally, there's a card that says go to hell, and it doesn't give you any bonuses if you just want to start off the same way every time. So that's the story mode, and again, it tells the story. It's pretty okay. If you're playing in portable mode, you might as well skip the story because the text is too small anyway. But, you know. But, anyways, then the game has dungeon mode. Now, dungeon mode allows you to create a party of three out of the three characters that you start with, or the 12 or so other characters you can unlock. And then you just go through, you know, a dungeon that you pick from a list and then try to get to the end. And it's like much more of a, you know, just a pick up and play kind of adventure. It scales up every level, of course, and it is randomized, so you never know what's going to happen. But then it becomes even better because it has this element of like not only building up your characters, but building them to play off of each other. Because remember, you can't just heal yourself. Like, that has to be a card that's in your deck, and you have to, you know, roll the correct element to get it, and you know, things like that. So it's like you know, to survive the longer battles, you really have to balance things out, which is, you know, super great. I've been playing a dungeon thing this whole podcast, in fact, and doing pretty good with it.
Nice.
And then there's a third mode that's called exploration. It says explore the map freely with three characters. It's totally locked away, so I have no idea what it is. So I'm just going to skip that. But that is three modes, two of which are party-based, and one of which is story-based, which is really cool. There is a skin shop where you can actually pick different costumes for your characters. That's also apparently where you can unlock the characters. Maybe you unlock them through gameplay, I don't know. But as you win each character scenario, you get these coins, and the coins can be used to unlock these costumes, and the costumes each carry with them a specific bonus that you get to take into every every time you pick that adventurer. So yeah, this is a, you know, the game looks pretty good. Like, it's got that kind of bare bones polygons kind of look, like it just kind of, you know, people don't really have mouths or anything or eyeballs, but you know, the polygons are there. It looks pretty sharp. The soundtrack, I could leave. I could take it or leave it. But what's really, really got me on this game is just how well the actual gameplay elements come together. It far surpassed my expectations when I was like, I'll try this one.
Nice. Well, the game is $15. What are your thoughts?
Yes, this is a buy it. I do recommend checking this game out. Yeah, don't let this one pass by. It's actually really high quality for what it is, and I've played a few of these things by now, so you know, I feel pretty confident in saying that. And yeah, I'm trying to think. I wonder if this is like the same, because it has a lot of elements of like the game Guard, which I talked about before. I don't know if this is the same dev because it's East Asia Soft, so I can only see the publisher. But anyways,
I don't know. Developer is Soft Star Entertainment. I forget what all they've done.
Yeah, I was going to say, I would not be surprised if these guys were responsible for Guard, because that game was also really good. And it's like almost the same exact style of
They've
like
done the Zuan Yuan series and the Sword and Fairy series.
Sword and Fairy? Oh, okay. Yeah. That's interesting. I was not expecting that. Well, oh well. It's a buy it. That's good enough. Cool.
Works for me. Next game is Beholgar, developed by Serkan Bakar, published by Dolores Entertainment, released October 20th on Switch and PS4, 21st on Xbox One for $9.99. An evil sorcerer reads the ancient book and invites an evil god to Earth. It is necessary to eliminate this evil threat, and the fate of the Earth is in the hands of a barbarian. Beholgar is a classically styled Metroidvania action adventure. Explore caverns, ancient woods, and deadly castles, battle creatures, and solve ancient mysteries at the kingdom. Pernell, what is Beholgar?
So Beholgar kind of reminds me a lot of Simon's Quest, actually, Castlevania 2. Because you kind of plop down at a location, and unlike where it's Castlevania 2, that you start in the middle of the map, you still start on the left, so far left of the map in this game. And you kind of pop into a town. They kind of set you up on the premise of what you're supposed to do, and you get moving. Your goal is to pretty much reach this. I can't remember what the time it was, like a dragon or something. I don't know, because I got my ass kicked half the freaking time because this game ain't easy. But anyway, the point is you're trying to find this dragon or whatever. And as you progress, you are quickly introduced to how things are going to get done as far as combat goes. At the offset, you can basically just do a basic squat and jump. You have access to a sword, which has its own attack power and speed of attack. You will eventually get new melee weapons that you can equip. You have sub-weapons that function similarly to Castlevania in that as you're running around, you'll find breakable objects that some or killable enemies, of course. And sometimes they will drop a new sub-weapon that you can use. And when you have it, that becomes the object that you're throwing, and you have a limited number of uses of that object. Examples of weapons are axes, boomerangs, fireballs. Those are the ones that come to mind the most because, oh, there's a spear that just kind of goes forward. That came in handy here and there, too. But they're the ones that primarily come to mind for me. You start out with, like, 5 uses of each sub-weapon that you can pick up individual pickups or individual drops that allow you to throw one more. But if you find a new sub-weapon, it replenishes it to the max. And you can, over time, find upgrades that will allow you to use more than 5 per access. This game is pretty freaking tough. You have a life bar that can be upgraded by finding collectibles, but you will die fast. Enemies do not play around in this game, and hits do hurt. Spikes are generally one-hit kills in this game as well, and they are everywhere, so watch your butt. Keep the spikes out of it. As you explore the map, you'll find, I guess somebody call it Metroidvania, because you will find impassable objects. You will find doors that are locked, and they are. You normally need to kind of find the object or ability that will allow you to bypass those things. So essentially, you locate new skill, or rather, new weapon, or new skill, or whatever that allows you to decimate an object and move further in. It's kind of hard to do in this game, and compared to normal games of this type, though, because there's no map. I don't know what they were thinking by not providing a map, but maybe that's the whole old school part. Because if I remember correctly, Castlevania 2 didn't have a full on map either. Just I think the castles kind of did. It's been a while. But I know the overworld had like a overworld map that just said location and locations, but not like actual routes that you could take. It didn't show you those things. And this game is no different. It does have a big overlay map, and you can warp between sections by, you know, going to the stew pots that you can find laced around the levels and warp between stew pots as needed. But you will be working for that. Money can be obtained by fighting and killing enemies, and you can spend that money to buy upgrades at shops that are located in various towns with various vendors. However, there are a few caveats here. If you die, you lose some of your money. You can't get it back. It stays gone. And again, you will die a lot, so that becomes a bit of annoying. I had a habit of actually finding locations when I was at a certain amount of money and grinding for the remainder funds for the items I wanted because I didn't want to risk dying and losing what I was at, where I was so close to buying what I wanted to buy. But the other thing that kind of annoys me about this is that the different shops will offer items that can upgrade, you know, your main character to do more things, such as like destroying objects by swinging at them, objects being melee and projectile attacks. You might find an item that will actually allow you to drop less gold when you die. All kinds of things. However, even though there is a menu that allows you to change weapons and change spells, there's no menu that shows you what ring items and accessories you've purchased or found. So, unless I'm missing something, which is very possible here, I'm old now, I say that a lot apparently too, Jesus crap. But you can't really see what you bought, you just have to remember what you purchased. I mean, if you're at the actual shop, yeah, it will show that you can't buy it because it's already been bought, but sometimes you might forget what rings you paid money for. Who the hell knows? So I kind of wish they would at least have a sub-menu that showed you the things you've already purchased with your own money. I did come across a few annoying glitches in the game, too. They weren't anything that made me just say, I'm done playing this stupid game, but there were some that really grinded my gears. For example, there was one specific monster that was like a little gremlin that had an axe. He takes 2 hits to kill. The first time you hit him, I kind of knock him back out of the air. The second time I hit him, no matter what state he was in, I would take damage. I, for a while, I thought maybe he was hitting me like a little quick attack that I couldn't see. For a while, I thought maybe it was a specific strategy to beating him, but nope. If I allowed him to jump in the air, he would hit me. If I allowed him to start moving again, he would hit me. So the only way I could get around this glitch was by literally rushing him, hitting him twice right off the bat. If I let him move around for a second attack, you always take damage just by virtue of the fact that you attacked him back. I don't know why, but that might be something worth looking into. And another glitch I came across was more of an animation glitch where sometimes, depending on where I warped back to the forest area, Beholger would kind of be stuck in the sword swing animation. Even when I was walking, it would just be like this. It would just drag the character image across the screen until I eventually managed to pull something off that broke the cycle and he would stand up again. I'm not sure what I did do to make it break. I just know eventually I would do something that would make it change up. So that didn't hurt the game. That just annoyed me. The thing about taking oddball damage, that annoyed the shit out of me. I mean, who I know, they might be listening to this right now and going, oh, that's totally intentional. But just saying, if it is, please tell me so I can know I can be mad for the right reasons. But I got to say, for all the crap I'm spouting, you know, the frustration of not having a map and getting lost, phantom damage, weird animation glitches, it didn't stop me from having fun with the game. I enjoyed getting wall grab abilities, and I enjoyed getting an extra jump, and I enjoyed finding new areas on the map, and I think getting much closer to being where I wanted to be. It has that one more run to the next bonfire feel to it, and I like that. It just would be nice if I weren't getting lost so damn much.
Fair.
So
it's $10. What do you say?
I would say it is a high-end try. But if they could add those elements to the game that I mentioned during this review, it would honestly jump to a buy. Because it is a good time. It's a challenging good time, but it's a good time.
Yeah, how about this? On Xbox, for the next 10 days, it is on sale for $7.99. What do you think?
I'd say it still doesn't change because I was good with it for the $10. It's just the thing that holds it back are those general vibes. Because I can picture some people hearing me talk about this and go, I would have bought it, but no map, fuck you. Like... It's sometimes a map is that big of a deal for players.
Yeah.
We have interconnected routes and stuff.
All right. Well, we got one final game to talk about tonight. That is called Cubite Classics Tin Head, developed by Pico Interactive, published by Cubite Interactive, released October 13th on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, and PS5 for $4.99. Tinhead is an action-adventure platformer which puts the player in control of Tinhead as he embarks on a journey to save the stars from the evil Grim Squidge. Leap, slide, hop,
Grim fly,
and shoot your way through the wacky worlds and super tricky, challenging levels as you guide Tinhead to free the stars. Who will save the stars before it's too late? Tinhead, defender of the edge of the galaxy, of course. Chris, how's Tinhead?
I wish that it would have said, like, somebody else at that point. But anyways. Okay,
Mario.
So... Okay, I apologize if I sound rough because I just had like this coughing like thing. You know that thing where you like, you know, you're sitting back and then just drool runs down your throat and like then you have to like cough.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had one of those just now, but nice. Fortunately I was muted. Okay, so Tin Head. This is another in a long line of Pico re-releases that just has me scratching my barely haired head. So
your thin head.
my thin head. No, my head's really fat though, actually. Anyways, that's a whole nother medical problem. No, I'm just kidding. So yeah, Tin Head. I was kind of aware of this game back in the Genesis days. The game came out in like 1993, I believe. And yeah, it was kind of in one of those you know, there's kind of like a B-list of mascot platformers that had come out in the early to mid 90s. You know, everybody's trying to capture that Sonic lightning in a bottle. And you know, so this guy's out there with, you know, James Cod and you know, Awesome Possum, things like that. Basically throw a character into some stages, have him collect some stuff and fight an occasional boss. So at its heart, that is what this is. So yeah, the interesting thing about this one, the gimmick, if you will, is that Tinhead is equipped like Mega Man style with a blaster with infinite ammo. He can shoot balls out of his head. I assume the balls are made of tin, and that must be why. But also, he's a robot, so maybe his head is also just made of tin. I don't know. But yeah, so the way the controls kind of work is that... depending on which version you play, there's a 16-bit version, quote-unquote, and a 16-bit alt, quote-unquote. And we're going to get to that alt in a minute, because it's infuriating me. But in the classic version, this is the Genesis game, just straight up, one of the buttons switches, it toggles between three aiming styles for the balls. So you can either shoot them straight ahead, and this is from the character's head, so these are from a high point and going straight forward. So there's a lot of ducking to shoot certain enemies this way, because a lot of enemies are not exactly at your eye level. And then there's another that goes diagonally up for, you know, enemies that are like straight above you. And then there's another that the symbol is diagonally down, which it just basically kind of pops out of the top of your head and bounces on the ground. And so it kind of becomes a, you know, just like a kind of grenade style weapon, for lack of a better word. So it's all about jumping through these levels, collecting the stars, which are the power-ups that equal to your score. And I believe that if you collect enough of them, I say I believe because the game does not tell you at all. But it seemed to be this way. If you collect enough of them to get to a checkpoint, then you can, like, basically get different kind of vehicles and, like, little transformations, like, you know, riding a cat head that is a blob, or having a helicopter rotor come out of your own head so you can fly around a little bit. Very Plock-like, in that they don't seem to be super necessary, but they're there because the programmers just wanted them to be in there. And like I said, so it's that way. There is another power-up that you can collect that lets you shoot faster. But again, your ammo is infinite, so you don't have to worry about that. And then, of course, there are power-ups that increase your life. You get a certain amount of hearts and a certain amount of hits before you die. And if you get killed too much, then it's game over, etc. So yeah, that's basically the game in a nutshell. It's all about going through these really large levels and trying to find the exit, and I believe a lightning bolt that triggers the exit. Again, the game doesn't tell you, but I noticed that there is a lightning bolt somewhere near the exit, and I couldn't seem to exit until I had collected it. So there you go. So that's and then like I said, there's four worlds, and each one is broken up into stages. There's lots of stages because this is a British game, and for some reason they love their stages. I actually literally thought that this game was never going to get away from this pink background that looks really good, but I was like, is this the whole game? Because I've been doing this a long time. But anyways, no, it turns out there's four worlds with just lots of levels in them, and then a boss at the end. The bosses look really cool, though. They're, you know, nice and screen size, really good looking sprites. The game is good looking. I really enjoy the graphics of this Genesis version. Lots of parallax scrolling. The sprites, like I said, they're nice and detailed. Animation's great. The soundtrack is, I'm going to say, passable. About the best you can expect out of a you know, Genesis platformer. Again, of the like kind of B-grade variety. So, yeah, that's the Genesis game, and it's all here. The bonuses that you get from this being on the Pico Collection is that you can change the control scheme, which, thank God, because it's mapped, it's a, you know, the Pro Controller or the Joy-Con mapped to Genesis controllers. So it's like the B button is jump, the A button is toggling the aiming, and then the Y button is shooting. So that makes no sense. No sense at all. And we'll come back to this, actually, because this is important. The second game is the 16-bit alt. Now, here's a little history of Tinhead. The game was published by Microprose, who published, among other things, Sid Meier's Civilization. So we're bringing that back now. that's why I know Microprose. When I saw that was the original publisher, I was like, oh no, I guess they were the developer too. But anyways, I was like, oh wow, I know these guys. But yeah, so they came out with this game on the Genesis. They developed a whole ass Super Nintendo game that had better controlling mapping, a better soundtrack, arguably better graphics, just depending on which flavor you enjoy more. But just kind of, you know, a equal, if not better, experience. That game's, you know, pretty legendary for being one of the earliest available Super Nintendo ROMs that never was actually published, because like I think the actual developer like published it on his own website like in the 90s. So, you know, people know Tin Head from its unofficial PAL release through emulation. So that has a little bit of history too. There was also an Amiga version in development that was canceled, and there's also an Atari Jaguar version that was also canceled because the sales for Tin Head on the Genesis were not good enough that, you know, basically these games got finished and then canned. So that's four games, four versions of this game that that never saw the light of day. We don't know which version the 16-bit alt is, because it's just given a date of 2019, which is, of course, the date that's
the Super Nintendo version.
It is not, because no? I had the Super Nintendo version on a flash cart, and I played it just today. This is a slower, lower frame rate, kind of clunkier version that has the Super Nintendo controls, but it is not, it's not up to par. Like the soundtrack does sound like it might be the Amiga version. So yeah, I don't even know.
I'm looking at Wikipedia, and it says that the 2019 release was the Super Nintendo. It got a worldwide release April 15th, 2019. I'm guessing it was like a homebrew release, my guess.
If that's the case, then they really messed it up for this release, because this release runs at a very slow pace. And like I said, it's chunky. And the other thing is that the colors aren't as saturated. The soundtrack isn't, I would not say, Super Nintendo level, but I mean, if they messed with it or something, I don't know. But yeah, like having played the Super Nintendo version of this, I was very sure that this wasn't it. However, it does have the Super Nintendo button mapping, which is way better, because since the Super Nintendo has A, B, X, and Y, they just mapped each of the shots to A, to B, Y, and X, and then made, you know, A, no, they actually, they did it the other way around. They made Y the jump button, which is odd, and then X, A, and B are just the different shots, respective to their aiming. So, like, X is, like, the diagonal up, right. A is the straightforward shot, B is the drop-a-bomb shot, which is, it makes a kind of sense. But anyway, yeah. The old version just, it so entirely just looks like a worse version than the Genesis version, but it has the better control scheme, so I'm like, why couldn't you have made that control scheme an option for the Genesis version and then just have the ultimate game there?
Yeah.
And release the Atari Jaguar version, you cowards. Just kidding. But anyway. Well,
it's a $5 package, what do you say?
$5 is a fine price for the original Tin Head, so I'm going to say it's a buy it for the Genesis game if you appreciate, you know, pretty good looking, but ultimately kind of, you know, B-grade Genesis platform shooters. There's nothing in this game that I wouldn't recommend for the $5. The old version is an interesting curio, but I don't even recommend playing it. I like that there's, you know, a save and load system, but that's pretty much it. That's all they've really given you here. Oh, and a background. It has a custom kind of background thing there for you. And you can stretch out the picture if you like. If you're, you know, I think you can do it in widescreen if you're a monster. and it does have remappable buttons. That's also very beneficial if you're playing the Genesis version. But yeah, why did they not put the control scheme that, like, so perfectly assigned the buttons, each one to a shot, you know, that makes perfect sense on a Nintendo controller. You know, why didn't they make that an option on the Genesis version and they make you toggle between the shots? That's one of the worst features of the game, is that you have to toggle the shots. Yeah. Anyways, so that's a minor complaint, but again, this is the Genesis game, so it's worth $5. I just wanted to talk a lot.
I can tell. No. How is it we spend so much time on, like, $5 reviews?
It's because it's a retro game, and I'm extra interested in those.
True. Not just that. It's not just that either. I genuinely believe this too. The cost doesn't always, you know, determine the quantity of the content of a game. It may just be that the game is cheap because they want to move copies, or maybe they don't have confidence in their products, or maybe they're like, you know, it's not a graphic powerhouse, so, you know, whatever. But I mean,
yeah, And I personally, and I know Purnell's the same way, we both have a real penchant for the obscure. And where there's history to be gleaned about like a classic game, like we're usually on it. We put on our detective hats and smoke a pipe and like, you know, get on the case.
That's
right. The game is afoot, as they say.
When there's an investigation to be done, we shall be there.
Exactly.
Did anyone do any Tin Head remixes?
I don't know of one.
God, am I going to have soundtrack- to look at OC Remix quick?
Yeah, I bet you that somebody like Temp Sound Solutions or something probably took it on. I bet you could find something. But yeah, I haven't heard the whole soundtrack. It's pretty good.
No results on OC Remix. Oh,
wow. Well, that means I got a job to do, I guess. Yep. I got to find the best song and
time for
be the one
to get on the job.
That is a job for Gimmick, that's for sure.
You could be the hero Gimmick.
Oh, boy.
Oh, man. Well, we won't be playing any Tin Head music this episode. What music should we play? Should we keep it rolling with the one-ups to keep the 20th anniversary celebration going?
Yeah. Do it for 20 shows.
Yeah, let's get Mustard some more support.
Do it for 20. Yeah, 20 shows in a row. Just the one-ups. Nothing but the one-ups.
Hey, they got enough material.
They do.
That would make it 20 up.
I mean, we've done the one-ups a lot on this show in the past, so I have zero problems doing it more.
I mean, they got good music, so what's not to like? Or, hell, play a gimmick track.
There are very few of those. I think you're better off doing the one-ups.
All right, Chris, what one-up song should we play?
Ah, I'm being put on the spot. What did I recommend last time? Did I already say the Ninja Turtle sewer level?
Yes, we did that for the...
I knew it. I knew that would be my first choice. Okay, it's Halloween, so we should do something from Songs for the Recently Deceased.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
I think the Ghosts and Goblins track would be a really fun little jam there.
One is... The Ghouls and Ghosts and Goblins and whatever else.
That's the one. It's the Ghosts and Goblins theme, but you know, they do it like it's got that really cool like upright bassist on that one, and they do it kind of, you know.
Nice. All right. So we will play that. Ghouls and Ghosts and Goblins and Gypsies from the One Ups. Does anyone have any final words to end the show?
Just did a bunch. You covered it.
Well, we need like an ending.
Ghouls and Ghosts and Goblins, oh my. Garbage Pail Kid, I'm looking at a calendar. There you go.